Hello Bulls fans, hope you're all doing well out there. It's Mark here. Fred isn't with me, but he will be with you shortly. I say that because we have part two of his discussion, his interview with Darnell Mabry of The Athletic coming up. If you haven't listened to part one just yet, head over to Chicago Bullseye. Wherever you can get all your podcasts, wherever you can find Bulls HQ, you will find Chicago Bullseye. That is C Red Fred, aka Fred Five, his standalone Bulls podcast. If you want to tune into more Bulls podcasts, head over and find Chicago Bullseye. Once you're done listening to all your Bulls HQ episodes, Fred recently had on Darnell Mabry of The Athletic on his pod. That was split up into two parts. You can find part one on the Chicago Bulls iFeed. Part two is right here on Bulls HQ. You can listen to part two very shortly, but if you haven't, go listen to part one first on Fred's feed, then come back here, listen to part two, listen to Darnell Mabry, speak some wisdom and educate my Fred on all things Tom Thibodeau, The Last Dance and plenty more. But tune in for part two coming up now. Fred and I will be back later in the week with our regularly programmed Bulls HQ. We'll see you on Monday. Speak soon, Bulls fans. But until then, here's Fred and Darnell Mabry.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Fred and Mark.
You are one of the most popular people who cover the Bulls, without a doubt, and it's obviously why. You're an incredibly talented writer. You're well respected by all members of Bulls Nation, from Dog Bull Nation to the leaders of C Red Nation. But that's why I found it so heartbreaking when you gave credence to this Bring Back Tibbs movement. Personally, I don't want that guy anywhere near this team. I'd like first to hear your thinking behind it. Why you think he would be the best choice for the Chicago Bulls moving forward?
Well, let me clarify you on something, Fred. I never said bring back Tibbs.
Okay. So your point was that was the big mistake.
The mistake was letting him go. And maybe you could argue the mistake maybe not was letting him go, but who you brought in after and where you went after.
Yes.
But the mistake, my contention was the mistake was letting him go. I never contended that they should bring him back. If they wanted to, fine by me. I mean, he's better than what they had the last 5 years.
I don't know about that.
Wait a minute.
I think he's a disaster right now. I think the game's passed him by. I think, when it gets down to it, I know there's a lot of people who really dislike my stance on this. But when it gets down to it, I think the guy jeopardized player health of some key players in the past for meaningless regular season wins. And that's something I just can't get over. And he showed no indication of moving on from that in Minnesota, to the point like I find it almost like I just can't believe that he's still beloved and defended for some of the things he pulled. Jimmy Butler played 48 minutes in a preseason game. Like, if I was the owner of a team and that happened, I would have fired the guy immediately. I don't care how much I owed him. What are you doing playing a player in the rotation 48 minutes in a preseason game? You know, that team was incredibly talented, and he went through these guys, and Noah's not even in the league anymore. Rose definitely suffered due to being overplayed. Dang tore wrist ligaments in the fourth quarter of a Bulls win over the Bobcats in 2012. That was a team that finished 7-59. What is Luol Deng playing in the fourth quarter of a game against the Bobcats? You know, that it just happened over and over again.
Fred, it's clear that you have drawn your line in the sand on this one. But Tibbs is better than Jim Boylan and Fred Hoiberg.
He's just definitely better.
Come on.
Definitely better than Boylan, but there was in your publication in The Athletic, there was a NBA, or what coach would you least like to play for? Boylan was two. Tibbs was one. For a team that we need to get free agents in here, why would we burden our new executive team with Tom Thibodeau as the head coach?
Yeah, like I said, I never campaigned for him coming up. First of all, I haven't campaigned for anyone to get any job, I don't believe, but I didn't campaign for that. I just think that the reasoning that they gave, and then where they were as a franchise at the time, to kind of make him the fall guy, that didn't make any sense. That was silly, and it looks like a terrible mistake in hindsight. I know a lot of people were in on letting him go at the time, so you don't even need to be a revisionist here. But you know, look at where they are. And I mean, I just don't see how anyone could argue that making that move and then the subsequent moves that followed, you know, like that trading Jimmy, like maybe so much of that didn't have to happen if you kept what you had and realized we're losing to a once in a generation player.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, that people forget is that Jimmy didn't want to play for Tibbs at the end of 2015. He had hit his expiration date with almost every player in that team outside of Taj Gibson. And that's what I heard. You know, like to me, like this Adrian Griffin should be the Bulls' next head coach. He's by far the best candidate. That's who I want to be coaching the Bulls. And there's such a large swath of the fan base that wants to go back, continually look back, and bring in the 60-plus-year-old Tom Thibodeau, who did nothing in Minnesota, who was a complete disaster. He traded draft asset after draft asset for 1.5 years with Jimmy Butler and one playoff win. Like, I don't want him anywhere in my team.
That one playoff win was their only playoff appearance in 14 years, so I think you do have to give him credit for that.
Okay.
And now keep in mind, I am the same guy who wrote that. I thought he shouldn't have had Derrick Rose in the game when everything went south.
Amen.
You know, and I think a lot of people disagree with me on that, but, you know, there are some people who see it my way. And I just didn't see the point in having Rose in the game with a minute something left, and they were up, you know, 9, 10 points, whatever it was. Now, you could obviously say that a comeback was within reach for Philly, but it felt to me watching that game live, and I was a huge fan of Derrick Rose from afar, that the game was in hand. And so you make valid points about how he played, guys. But going back to what I said about Jim Boylan, you know, if you have a guy who's communicative and has great cooperation, you know, maybe Tibbs has learned something. You know, just because he coached a certain style back then, maybe doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to coach that way now. You know, maybe because he played a lot of guys a lot of minutes back then doesn't mean that he's not going to be adaptable now. I wouldn't, you know, if it was my job to hire him, would I hire him to take a chance? Probably not.
I'd like to believe that was true, but in 2017, in April, that 31-win Timberwolves team had a back-to-back to end the season. And that guy played Karl Anthony Towns in a back-to-back. Karl Anthony Towns, he played him 40 minutes and 36 minutes in the final two games of that season, both losses. To me, it was the most egregious example of a head coach. I've never seen anything so incredibly stupid, and that includes Boylan with all his idiotic timeouts. Why are you playing your best player 40 and 36 minutes in a back-to-back of a season when you should be trying to lose? And I'll never understand. And nobody was paying attention. I pay attention to everything that guy does. I feel like it would be a disaster if Adrian Griffin was not the next Bulls head coach.
Well, let me say this to you, Fred. I think Adrian Griffin's a lot closer to getting that job than Tom Thibodeau.
Thank
I don't think you have anything
Lord.
To worry about.
Thank the Lord. And what have you heard about Adrian? Do you agree with me that he'd be a great choice?
I mean, I think he's a great candidate. I don't know if, I mean, sure. I mean, you could say he's a great candidate, but you never, just like these guys in the front office, you never know until they get in the job and actually do it.
Good point.
You know, I think a lot of people thought Fred Hoiberg was going to be a solid candidate, and that for various reasons, not solely due to Fred Hoiberg, but it didn't work out. So, management, it sounds like ownership still thinks Jim Boylan has some sort of positive virtues that are worth retaining. And, in there, and we're saying that it's not there. So, Adrian Griffin could or he could be, you know, be another flame out. But from everything I'm hearing, he sounds like he is the right person for this job at the right time, and the Bulls could benefit greatly from bringing him on.
I hope he's the coach, because I've heard nothing but stellar things about the guy, and I think he's a leader of men, and that's what we need right now. And Jim Boylan is the village idiot, and just having a guy like this who's a leader of men, Boylan's a nice guy. I don't want to say he's a dummy. He just is clearly not, you know.
I think you just called him a village idiot.
I didn't mean to say it. I should. That was probably a little strong. I'm just saying, when somebody asks him about Denzel Valentine, the answer, because I said so, is not an appropriate answer for a head coach in 2019 and 20. So, you know, that kind of stuff I have no patience for. So he's I don't want to say village idiot. That was wrong. He's a just a village average guy. He shouldn't be head coach in the league. Last question. You've been more than generous with your time. I apologize about that. Please don't tell Coach that. The Last Dance. I want to get from your viewpoint. You grew up as a Wizards fan, right? What was your team?
Yeah, the Wizards were my team. It was my first NBA game when I was like in middle school, and when they were the Bullets, obviously. And then I stuck with them, and here I am, miserable.
Do you remember Michael with the Wizards?
Yeah, I remember Michael with the Wizards, which, you know, I didn't appreciate how, and maybe it's because I'm in Chicago now, but, and I wrote this thing yesterday in our recap of this week's episodes. You know, now all of a sudden everyone wants to praise what he did in baseball when the whole world was kind of mocking him. And again, maybe it's because I'm in Chicago now, but, you know, now people want to appreciate that, but I can't appreciate what I saw him do with the Wizards as a 36, 37-year-old man, 38-year-old man.
What I thought he did with the Wizards was amazing. And I've always, you will never hear me say a bad word about Michael Jordan. He's the greatest.
I get laughed at when I bring up Jordan's time with the Wizards. It was incredible. Was he Air Jordan at the time? No, but what he did was incredible. And just like people are appreciating, I guess now or maybe in Chicago, always did what he did in baseball to, you know, not have picked up a bat in so long. I appreciated what he did with the layoff and old age relatively. Going and doing what he did with the Wizards.
He was phenomenal, especially in that first year. He averaged over 20 points. It's like, I want to find out of these people who are making fun of you because I can berate them on Twitter and target them for destruction because no one makes fun of Michael. What are some of the revelations in this doc that have stuck with you, stuff that you didn't know? Is there a lot or is there just a little?
I mean, it's little tidbits. And, you know, again, being young at the time, especially the early three-peat, the first three-peat, you know, I didn't comprehend everything. And unlike a lot of, you know, diehard, hardcore Bulls fans, I haven't digested every piece of material. So, you know, little things like Jerry Krause simply asking Jerry Reinsdorf to be Bulls GM coming over from the White Sox. Like, that's how easy it was to become a GM in those days. Like, that blew my mind. The Jordan minute restriction that really drove him up the wall early in his career. You know, hearing some of these stories of the slights, you know, those things, but really just Jordan's realness that we're seeing in this and his rawness. Like that's what's really standing out to me, seeing him make himself vulnerable. And I thought he made a great point. And that one was an episode 7 at the end. He said, I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
You know, but he's doing it and he's showing us a different side of him. In so many different ways, and I just really appreciate that about the documentary.
And Darnell, as somebody who grew up in Chicago, I remember the time when we were known as nothing but losers. We had one 85 Bears team that really, in retrospect, should have won more. It was almost a failure in the fact they didn't win more. And that was it for about two decades, and he single-handedly destroyed every negative connotation with Chicago as a second city. From 1991 to 1998, and I will always be grateful for it. And there's nothing that anyone could ever say or do to make me, you know, love Michael Jordan any less. What he has done for this city will never, ever be erased. And everybody in the whole city, I think it should be mandatory every year, send him a thank you note. I think it should be a law.
I think they do that by buying $200 pairs of shoes.
Hey, but those shoes are awesome. Have you seen the Jordan 11s, Carolina Blue? They're the best
they
shoes
are.
Ever made.
They are.
this is awesome. Darnell, I can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. And I'd like to get one final question, if that's okay. I just like your prediction. If we bring these guys back next year and we get a real functioning coach, is it possible that you can see this team becoming a playoff team, not only a playoff team, maybe a team that can get into the second round?
I'm not going to share your optimism again, Fred. I'm not going to do it. They got to prove it to me. I saw something where Zach LaVine said something on social media today where he's talking about they got to come out hungry and have this killer mentality or something. I'm like, Zach, just don't even talk anymore. Just go out there and do it. You know, we know what you have to do. Everyone knows what this team has to do. And I'm tired of hearing about it. You know, I want to see them go out there and do it. And until they do, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to believe that Lauri Markkanen can take the next step. I'm not going to believe that, you know, Wendell or even Zach can raise their games until they show me. Like, I believe in their potential, but they've got to go out there and prove it. And they got to show that they're committed to it on both ends and doing it for 48 minutes and doing it for 82 games. And until then, I'm going to look at them as a non-playoff team. I'm going to look at them as a team of, you know, individual talents who are all, again, talented in their own right, but as a whole, they just have yet to be able to put it together. Now, how much does the coach factor into that? A ton. And we're going to see who they get in here, you know, if not for this season, then potentially next season. And we'll see how much of a difference that makes. But these guys got to have some sort of level of commitment and dedication to going out there and saying enough is enough.
Aren't you seeing that with Kobe? I mean, look at the improvements that kid made this year. Do you feel like he's one of those guys, a shining light that's going to hopefully lead these guys out of the wilderness?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's got to work on becoming a more efficient scorer.
Yeah,
you know, he's got to become a little bit better of a finisher. He improved on those things a little bit. He's got to be able to get a little bit better off the dribble and, you know, being able to get by his man and break down his opponent in the half court. Like, he's got a lot of room for growth, which is to be expected. He was a rookie, and he showed great signs throughout his rookie season. But, I mean, do I look at him as the guy who's going to lead this team? Not just yet.
Well, to wrap this up, I can't thank you enough again for your time here, Darnell. But I think you've joined followed the Chicago Bulls at a great time. In the next 3 years, you're going to write the next formative book, something similar to Jordan Rules, about how this team turned into a championship, you know, it's the seventh title.
And 3 years, where are we on the seven? Where are we on the seven scale?
Well, here's all the sevens that you need to know. There's seven letters in Michael. There's seven letters in Arturis. In 1986, Michael Jordan was on a minutes limit of 7 minutes per half. We had 7 pick in 17, 7 pick in 18, 7 pick in 19, 7 pick this year, apparently, if things go to form. That's all I got right now. But within the next 3 years, we'll be getting our seventh title. You heard it from me first, and I cannot wait to read the book. You have to write a book when they win it, right? I mean, I'm buying it. I'll be on your PR tour if you need it. I mean, I'm ready to talk.
Well, nobody's going to buy the Jim Boyle and Fred Hoiberg book. Yeah.
That's one other thing I wanted to ask you. Can I interview you for? I'm doing a doc on the Three Alphas. Can you? Would you mind doing a couple segments?
I mean, I wasn't here for it, but if you want me, I'm here for you, Fred.
Well, we can talk over the opposing viewpoint.
You know, my second day on the job was when Bobby Portis punched Nico.
Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone raves about Michael Jordan's punching Steve Kerr and Will Perdue and all those guys. It's a little bit different when Bobby punches Nico.
Now, in retrospect, can we come clean? Were you there for that? Like, did you see it happen?
No, none of us were there. It happened. I can't remember if it happened. I think it happened. I don't remember if we talked to him and then it happened after we all left, or if it happened and then we didn't know about it. But it happened, and we weren't there later.
Yeah.
So
I always argued
it was a hell of a second day.
I don't know if you read my transformative or world shattering seven most overrated Bulls. I had Nico Mirotic.
There you go with the number seven. Seven is your favorite number, isn't it?
You didn't hear about the two most underrated players of all time were, in my opinion, Ben Gordon and Tony Kukoc. Underrated Bulls of all time. They both wore number seven. There's just something magical about that number, and the Bulls should have won a seventh title in 99. Now, you know, we're waiting to see when that seventh title will occur. But regardless, the most overrated was Nico Mirotic. Did you feel like the team, after that punch, supported Bobby or Nico?
You know, I'm different. I thought a lot of people felt like they sided with Bobby. I thought they the guy got suspended for, what was it, seven, eight games?
Seven, probably.
You know, seven. Yeah, here we go again. I think it was eight, Fred. But, I mean, come on, that comes at a cost. You know, the guy wasn't getting those game checks. You know, like, he had to sit out. He was a disappointment to his teammates. He took a hit. You know, his reputation took a hit. So it's not like – and they blame both sides. I mean, they said both players were at fault. So I didn't see it as – the team choosing one side or the other. I saw him as both player. I mean, this is what they said. Both players were at fault. Nico paid the price with his jaw or cheekbones and having to miss a month and a half or whatever it was. And Bobby paid the price with his game checks and the suspension. So having to come out and publicly apologize, losing some of his reputation, which, you know, for some wasn't maybe great anyway, but that really put it over the top. So I always saw it as the organization was, I thought, as fair as possible and kind of being down the middle.
The last question I had, in your time here in Chicago, what was the best and worst move in retrospect of the Garpax era? That would be your time here, so that would be, you know, the Nico punch going forward. Yeah, not a lot of light there. I feel free if you feel like looking back, say something that really stands out. Obviously, the greatest four moves were the Butler draft pick, the Rose draft pick, the Noah draft pick, and the, I'd say, Luol Deng trade.
So not the Cameron Payne trade?
How dare you? No. Well, you like Cameron Payne, right?
I don't really know him like that. I just thought that the guy had a rough start to a professional career and tried to paint the picture. But, you know, so none of it for me is about, you know, who
it's not
I like
personal.
In that sense.
Yeah, it's not personal.
Like, I did say this to some of our readers in our comment section, like, Zach makes the job easier. That's the thing about it. Like, Zach's fun to watch. They'd be terrible without him. So, you know, of course you're going to appreciate anything or anyone who makes your job more pleasant. Yeah. I don't care who you are or what you do. And for us as beat writers, Zach LaVine makes the job more pleasant. And you know, that's watching him on the floor, that's talking to him in the locker room after the game. So, I think you just have a greater appreciation for anything or anyone who makes your job more pleasant. But I think to answer your question, Fred, I mean, I would probably have to go with the Otto Porter trade just because they got such an asset in Otto. Even though I thought the trade wasn't the best just because they gave up a second round pick as opposed to getting some sort of compensation when they were taking on the bloated contract, which is what you normally see teams get in salary dumps when the Wizards needed to dump Otto Porter. But to turn Jabari Parker and
Bobby Portis.
Who's the other guy?
Bobby Portis
into you know a premier 3-point shooter. I mean, that's, I think, the best trade. Am I missing something? I think that the worst, I don't know. But what am I missing on the best? Is there one I'm missing?
I'd say the Zach LaVine, when they matched that contract from the Kings, I think in retrospect that was a fantastic move. I think trading Nico for a first-round pick, you know, in Hutch, you know, still the jury's out on him. I like him a lot. I think he's got a great future ahead of that overrated stiff Nico. I love the Wendell Carter pick. I love the Kobe White pick. And, you know, people wanted Mo Bamba ahead of Wendell Carter. My big point here is, in retrospect, you know, Garpax, rightly so, has been, you know, really ridiculed over the past few years. I just think their worst move was hiring Boylan as the head coach. I think that's by far the worst move they made. I thought they've drafted pretty well over the course of their, you know, almost two decades, but it was time to move on. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, I think in retrospect it's going to be hard to beat Rose, Noah, who they essentially got for Eddie Curry. They were able to switch that draft pick with the Knicks, and then Jimmy Butler at 30. I mean, you're going to go see that would be the best pick for the next two decades.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm with you on the worst as well. Not so much that they fired Fred when they did and promoted Jim, which is a whole separate discussion and issue, but obviously giving him the full job without even doing a coaching search and just assuming that he was the guy. And maybe I'm being a little unfair saying assuming. They saw the guy work the rest of that 18-19 season, so they knew what they had. And we're able to evaluate off of that, but to not even think that, okay, maybe we can do better and go out looking for it, that to me was probably the biggest mistake.
I don't like how he treats you guys, you and KC, and he loves Collie. Well, Collie's writing these comic books about him. Like, he's a good coach. He's not a good coach. You know, like, it's that really irritates me how he is in the post game. Am I wrong in what I'm seeing here? It seems like he gives, like, deference to Cowley or treats him like, and I'm not trying to rip on Cowley. I disagree with a lot of what he's written over the last two decades. He's not my favorite beat writer, but, you know, that's just my opinion. But do you see what I'm seeing? Like, I'm like, why is this guy being elevated in Jim Boylan's eyes when there's superior writers that are not being given the deference they need or that they deserve?
Well, I mean, yeah, I see it. I live it, obviously. But, you know, I think the one thing in this business, it's all about relationships and, you know, who you have relationships with, who you can form close relationships with. And, you know, Jim Boylan feels comfortable with certain people and maybe not as comfortable with others. And, you know, you do the best you can to work around it. And, you know, I mean, that's pretty much where I'd leave it. You just do the best you can to work around it. And Jim's been, I mean, you know, I live it. So I understand what you're saying, but you know, I don't write that punch clock story without Jimbo taking me in and like, you know, giving me some time and walking me through some things. So, regardless of whatever his stance or attitude was in season, you know, he's always kind of treated me with respect in terms of making sure that he gave me time when I asked for it and you know, kind of taking me out, going out of his way to open this door for me. You know, the Q&A I did his first season, breaking down his basketball philosophies. I mean, I went back there and spent a lot of time with him. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying and how it comes off on television, and it can be annoying at times. But, you know, I also have to remember that Jim Boylan has opened his door to me more than once, and you know, I'm forever appreciative of that.
You're the greatest, Darnell. I can't say enough good stuff about you, your articles, your must-read. Like I said, I've enjoyed every article you've ever written outside of that Thibodeau article. And you're definitely you're a shining light. The city is so blessed with you and KC to have, you know, the right who cover this team. It's just we're blessed. And I can't thank you enough for your time. Please believe in us. Don't leave us. I always get worried about that, you know, New York or Golden State or somebody else will take you, especially now as things are turning around for the better.
Well, and I appreciate all the kind words, Fred. I appreciate everything you do. When, you know, when I first got here, I wanted to know who the diehards were, and you were the first guy who popped up on my radar. So, you know, it's fans like you who keep us employed and give us some excitement about the job, especially in those down doldrum days. So, thanks for everything you do, man. And no matter what people say, keep your sevens alive, man. Oh. You got to keep riding that till the wheels fall off.
The Red Leviathan is back. You know it. I can't wait. I'll send you a T-shirt when I get these printed up.
I will rock it with pride.
Thanks, Darnell.